Talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Sonarly, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits. All points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. Going right to the front lines of history in the making. And I want to start about talking about inflation. We have on the line Jeff of Milwaukee, Professor Jeff Summers. He wrote a very interesting article just the other day. Every time you're talking to a Republican, remember this, over the last 6 months, all you hear was, oh, inflation, inflation, as if it wasn't international, as if it was only in the United States, and as if somehow the United States wasn't doing a far better job than anyone else in containing it. Jeff Summers is a well-regarded professor of economics and economic policy. And we're going to have him on the line. I want to talk to him about some of the conclusions he drew in his article. Jeff from Milwaukee, Professor Jeff Summers, welcome. Welcome on the show.
Matt, great to connect with you again.
Yeah. And Jeff, I want to say, I read your article, and a very interesting article. And several of the things you said in it, I want to explore because it was counter to what a lot of Democrats hear from Republicans who claim about inflation but don't really know what they're talking about. And there are two conclusions you drew which I think are very interesting. One of them is that inflation is really decreasing, and it's probably decreased a lot more than the average person realizes. And number two, that it may have decreased so much that the Fed should stop raising interest rates. So, Jeff, welcome to the show. And if you could talk about that a little bit, I'd appreciate it.
Great, Matt. It is nice to be here. And yes, I'm happy to discuss this. I think you're absolutely right. Many Republicans create this narrative that it was the Biden administration that somehow had generated this inflation, just as you had stated, even though it was a global phenomenon. So it certainly wasn't something that was homegrown. It was something that at home we had to react to. So, but just in terms of arguing this on the facts, I mean, first we need to recognize that inflation has declined in the United States every month for the past 6 months. So this has been steady and even in terms of this drop. We'll see when it finally halts. But thus far, we have seen this continuing drop. Now, one of the things that we had to contend with this past summer and even into the autumn were the high prices that we were experiencing at the pump. And of course, this is where, you know, people really, really feel inflation, you know, with food and fuel. And every time you go to that fuel pump and you have to fill up that tank, it's a big hit. You know, you can be paying when gas prices are high, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 bucks. That is not a small amount of money. So people are reminded of that whenever they have to fill up the tank. Now, I think the Biden administration actually took the right response to this crisis. What they did was they decided to draw upon the strategic petroleum or oil reserve in an effort to bring more oil into our domestic market and to take some of these inflationary pressures off of the economy. And it worked. It worked. If we take a look at where average gasoline prices are, if we adjust for inflation, they're kind of roughly around the rate that they were at around the time, you know, Obama left office or Trump took office, you know, not too far from that. And, you know, the reason that we saw these very high prices at the pump were twofold. One, of course, we had this, and still have, this terrible war in Ukraine that Russia has launched. And the United States and Russia have been launching these economic salvos at each other in an attempt to hurt each other. So, you know, the Russians thought that, well, you know, they can affect us and our ability to support Ukraine through applying pressure through increased energy prices. And the United States has been trying to hurt Russia through, you know, various sanctions that it's placing upon them.
So Jeff, just interrupt for a second. You think it was a good thing. I do, too, by the way. But you think it was a good thing that Biden tapped into the oil reserves. The Republicans heavily criticized that. Of course, it's replenishable. But that's a big part of your article, that it was right for him to do that, for to tap into it.
Oh, absolutely. And at the time, I thought it was probably the right move. I wasn't absolutely 100% convinced it was, but I thought probably on balance it was. And, you know, was it a gamble? Yes. Everything is a gamble. And it's turned out that it was the right bet because the prices have been brought back down, and we are already scheduling new oil purchases to refill the reserve beginning in February. So, you know, that's a week from now. So we're on the way back towards somewhat of a normal situation. Now, the other component of this was that, you know, big oil, they were content to sit on the sidelines and, you know, just reap super profits as prices were going up. And the banks, you know, were not too keen to fund anything by way of exploration and drilling, because they had gotten really burnt by the fracking boom, back during the Obama and Trump years. Well, at the tail end of the Obama years and into the Trump years. So, you know, tons of money went into that. And then the prices, you know, fell out, and a lot of investors, banks were left holding the bag on investments in that sector that, you know, just could not be paid off. But after having sat on the sidelines for quite a long time now, there is money rushing into the oil and gas sector again. Now, you know, from a green perspective, this is not necessarily the best thing. But in the short run, it is a good thing. So, you know, right now we see U.S. oil production, contra, you know, the Republican narrative, it's at record highs. So, you know, the Biden administration has not done anything to halt oil production. Again, we are at record highs at this very moment. And in terms of natural gas production, we're quite close to our record highs, and we're probably going to reach record highs in fairly short order, given the huge investment that's gone back into drilling and exploration. So, we are going to probably see stabilization of energy prices. At least, you know, one can hope. Of course, there's always the possibility of external shocks, especially in an international environment of war. But right now, it looks like we have to use the analogy of maybe a kayaker who's going through the rapids. We've gone through the rapids, and now we're back into calm waters.
Very good. And then you also had a conclusion. I found that interesting, that the Fed, right now that inflation is under control so well, that the Fed can stop raising interest rates. And, you know, people have debated that, and it's a rock and a hard place, because you raise inflation rates or interest rates, people think, well, that'll lead to a recession, and that's what's needed to get us down. I don't think Paul Krugman thinks that, and I don't think you think that. So I'd be interested in your telling us, as a professional economist, your views on why the Fed could stop raising interest rates right now.
Yeah, well, I'm a political economist. And, you know, this is just one of these academic nuances that one must clarify. But I do agree with Paul Krugman on this matter. In other words, we are seeing, again, this reduction of pressures on prices, on the upward trend of prices. So we really should back off on these Fed price hikes to, you know, the cost of lending money, because it risks throwing us unnecessarily into a recession that now it looks like we do not need. So in other words, is there a balance between supply, in other words, how many goods and services are available in the economy, And demand, yeah, it looks like we're coming back to some kind of rough equilibrium in there, and we do not want to throw this economy into a recession. So I think it's really time to back off. They've risen high enough, and we're actually starting to see some nice benefits to labor. I mean, we're actually seeing wage growth, and wage growth, as you know, has been stunted in this country for four bloody decades. And wage growth is still a little bit, a smidge behind the general rate of inflation. So we really want to see wage growth actually catch up a little bit and see workers do a little bit better. It doesn't seem to be generating any inflation right now. Again, just the opposite. We're seeing that rate come down. And as long as that rate is continuing to come down, I don't think we should raise prices anymore. Now, there are also, you know, what we call core factors in the that make up the rate of inflation. So I was referencing what we call non-core factors, you know, food and fuel, which are seen as erratic and unstable. In my article, but there are also these core issues such as shipping rates, which absolutely soared in the wake of COVID. Because when everyone, you know, went into these lockdowns, they switched their spending from services to goods. And at the same time, we had rolling lockdowns and factories and at ports in Asia, and it just completely mucked up the international shipping system. And shipping rates just absolutely soared by several multiples. Well, those have really, really come down dramatically, those shipping rates now. And so that bodes well in terms of reducing another point of pressure on prices. And then another one is computer chips. You know, so as you and your listeners know, in the past couple of years, car prices in particular were just sky high because we had a shortage of computer chips.
Yeah, well, thank you. Jeff, everybody, Jeff's article, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, very influential. Jeff is a well-regarded professor of economics and economic policy at UWM. We're coming to the end of the segment, Jeff, and I'll comment on it right after the break. Thank you very much for calling in. Very, very helpful. I appreciate it. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Director, our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Appreciate Professor Summers. Jeff's coming on the show. And the reason I did that is very simple. If you take a look at all the polls, and I'm sure this is happening to everybody listening to this program, you get in with a bunch of Republicans, and there's kind of a mantra, oh, the economy. Biden's not that good on the economy. The economy. Biden's not that good on the economy. Let me tell you something. We have full employment, wages are up, and you have just heard a professional economist give the reasons why inflation is under control. It's been reduced every month for 6 months. He and other professional economists do not believe the Fed has to continue raising interest rates, which means that we should not be thrown into a recession. And Biden, under his leadership, and it's not alone, no president is solely responsible for inflation, and no president is solely responsible for getting out of it. But the fact of the matter is that when you look at all of the international problems, the genocidal attack by Russia on Ukraine, what China is doing, COVID, the shipping problem and all of that, I think we are out of the woods. Professor Summers does too. Professor Krugman is also a journalist. He writes an op-ed piece. The New York Times believes that as well. And that's the good news. The next time anybody goes, oh, well, the polls seem to show that somehow people think Biden isn't good in the economy, there's no one better. There is no one better. Now I'm going to go to a topic a bunch of people who aren't good on the economy. That would be the Republican Party. That would be the Republican leadership. We talked the other day about their leveraging. They're using refusal to raise the debt limit to cut Social Security and Medicare, and you're going to hear conflicting messages about that. Let me set it straight. Let me tell you what happened yesterday, and then let me tell you what they're trying to say this morning. Yesterday, a group of Republican lawmakers spoke to the Republican caucus, to any Republican wanted to be there, which was most of them, and they pushed for cuts to Medicare and Medicaid in this negotiation over the debt limit and were specific about it. You know, up until now, it's been easy for them to say, well, we just want some undefined cuts and it'll take care of itself. Well, they specifically did talk about entitlement programs and what they wanted to do. And it was a slide presentation yesterday. They not only want to cut Medicaid and Medicare, but they also want to change subsidies from the federal government for Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act, supposedly Obamacare, change that to block grants. Block grants, a terrible idea. Biden opposed it. The Democrats in the Senate oppose it. Why is that a terrible idea? Let's say you're the governor of a red state and you're getting $1 billion for Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act subsidies, or your people are in your state. Republicans want to take that money, and not all of it either, and give it to the governor, the Republican governor of that state. What do you think would happen if DeSantis got that? What do you think would happen if Abbott got that in Texas? Or the governor of Mississippi? Or the governor of Alabama? Or if a Scott Walker got that? Tell you what they would do. They have done in the past. They would take that money and use it for other purposes. They would use it for state tax cuts. They'd say, thank you very much. They did that with COVID relief money, that they weren't supposed to do that. That went to the governors. And in a lot of the red states, they just used it to cut state taxes of people with higher incomes. And it didn't get to where it was supposed to go. Block grants work when you have honest governors. Block grants work when you have governors who care about their state and their country. Block grants essentially are stolen, not necessarily in people's pockets, but diverted to other purposes like tax cuts, if you give it to a governor like DeSantis or Abbott or some of these other governors who do not care about a significant population of their state. Now, this morning, I started to read that McCarthy has taken off the table, Kevin McCarthy, the idea of cuts to Medicare and Medicaid in his holding up the debt ceiling increase. Oh, really? Okay. It didn't come from him. Believe it or not, he's been negotiating with Joe Manchin. Now, I don't trust Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin and Sinema had an opportunity to enact voting rights, stop gerrymandering, stop voter repression. They didn't do it. So the only response of the Republicans to this is that Manchin comes forward and said, I've been talking to Kevin McCarthy, and I really don't believe he really wants Medicare and Medicaid cuts. And he really doesn't want Social Security cuts. And I'm supposed to believe that and take some comfort in that? Listen, if that's true, what cuts does he want? The military? We can't afford to cut the military. We're standing up against Russia and China. They talked about meat inspectors. Come on, how much do you think meat inspectors get? Do you want them to stop meat inspection? You really want to stop meat inspection? How about mental health, other kinds of health things? They don't want to cut that. What do they want to cut? What do they want to cut? There's a shell game going on. There's a shell game going on, and they are threatening to not raise the debt limit unless there are unspecified cuts to something. And they did a slideshow presentation yesterday showing exactly what it was, which is Medicare, Social Security. And now they come out through Manchin. Now, what the hell is he doing shilling for McCarthy and saying, no, no, that isn't what they want. What do they want? We're not telling you what they want. Well, they got to tell you what you want, or they've got to raise the debt limit, or Biden's got to invoke the 14th Amendment. Going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Andy of Beaver Dam, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's in my day? Andy of Beaver Dam.
Well, Matt, I do believe your economist and what he says about what has happened with gas and food prices and stuff. But on the broadcast, just before you came back on the air, now they're talking about increases. It's up. Gasoline has gone up, what, 40 or 50 cents a gallon from what it was back in late 22. I mean, it's such a complex issue. What can be done to, you know, all these years, you know, what can be done to basically set a fair price for the cost of gasoline and so forth so that there isn't all this. I don't think there's really a cure to go for all this roller coaster in petroleum prices. You know, I just don't know what the heck it is. You know, like they're saying, oh, it could be like going approaching $4 again. You know, I don't know. I just don't know that it's such a, you know, a intangible thing to get a reach on, to control or whatever.
Right. Well, it's interesting. You're making a very good point. And here's what it is. On gas prices, when it spiked as high, it was up over $5. And that was intolerable. What Joe Biden did was he tapped the oil reserves. The government has these oil reserves. And that brought it down somewhat. And then he signed contracts for more oil to replenish them. Secondly, inflation has gone down every month for the last 6 months. It keeps going down. And the fact of the matter is that at one time, there are places in Milwaukee where it was under $3 within the last, I think it was 30, 45 days. It was under $3. You know, you start getting in that range. And remember, there are laws. I mean, there are monopoly. I personally think, for instance, in the non-gasoline area, that Amazon's a monopoly, Facebook, Google. But the oil companies, there's conscious parallelism to some extent. That's a term from antitrust law. But basically, you have more than one oil company, and the prices fluctuate. So it's you don't want to control the economy by the state like you'd have in a communist country, because it's not efficient. And even though you might think it worked for a couple of months, it destroys an economy. So all I can say is, I can say several things. One, Professor Summers had a good point in saying that as long as the genocidal attack on Ukraine by Russia continues, and as long as we support Ukraine, which we must, and I think it's the right moral thing to do, they're going to be dislocations in prices. We are suffering fewer of them than they are in Europe. If you think we're suffering them, take a look at Europe. Secondly, you have China threatening Taiwan. You have an easing of the shipping crisis. You have an easing of the supply chain crisis. But we're never going to be able to say, okay, it's $2.49 a gallon. It's like the sun rising in the east, and it's going to keep on forever. No, that's not going to happen. But I think that with proper management, and I think that Biden's done a good job in that, that's what's occurred. And I think if Trump ever got in or these other people got in, it'd be a disaster. Going back to the lines, Wisco Paul, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Wisco Paul?
Oh, good afternoon, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for having the economist on. Biden has done a good job with the economy with little and no help from the GOP. You kind of explained the gas thing, so it does have something to do with the war. I just wanted to mention a little bit about Tony Evers' speech last night. I thought it, all in all, was a pretty good speech on the budget. But it seems to me, well, hopefully the flat tax is a non-starter, but it seems to me somebody that wants to do something about forever chemicals in the water and education, you'd think that was a good thing, but it sounds like the Republican Party is going to go against everything, if that's the case, that's very sad. And you know where the roads head from there. Okay, Matt, thanks.
Thanks a lot, Wisco Paul. Yeah, the Republicans, they don't have any class. Not only are they malignant, but, I mean, they don't clap for anything. They sit there stone-faced, for Pete's sake. And, look, the reason we have forever chemicals in the water throughout Wisconsin right now, and that is because the Republican Party, through its donors, the Manufacturers Association, kept Fred Prenn on there as the swing vote, the DNR Advisory Board, and they blocked any attempt to set rules and standards. It's now in Green Bay. It's in Lake Michigan. It's in every part of Wisconsin. In every part of Wisconsin, you have some fish that you shouldn't eat more than like one a week or one a month. They put poison in our water. And everybody out there thinks he's a hunter and a fisherman. I like fishing. Go up to the Kenai Peninsula and fish for halibut with my buddies in Alaska. But I don't want cancer in the water. And anybody who votes for people who put cancer in the water is out of his mind. You're absolutely right. The Republicans are obstructive. This is not the Republican Party of old. They're frightened because they are frightened of being beaten in a primary. And the sad thing is that if we had fair maps, which is why the Supreme Court election is so important, if we had fair maps, 50-50 districts, 49-51 districts, they wouldn't have to be frightened because if they sucked up to their donors, they'd lose the election with everybody else. And it's a chicken and the egg. We got to get fair maps back. Thanks for calling. Next up, Gene of Eau Claire, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Gene of Eau Claire?
Good afternoon, Matt. Outstanding guests and callers today. I'm getting more and more educated every day. But I have to tell you, the Republicans are, I'm sorry to you, but they're repulsive. And I never felt that way about Republicans in my lifetime. And I'm not talking about the people Republicans. I'm talking about the people that are running our government. It started in Wisconsin, the infestation and disease, and it came with big money donors with the Koch brother and Alec, and big money that wanted to be able to pollute and have laws changed for them and not have to pay any taxes on their money and don't give one gall dang bit about the people in our state. And the only ones that can care about the people in our state are the people and the people that are working for them. And I have to say the people with the D after their name. And I don't belong to a party, never have. But believe you me, I've been taking notes for a long time here, and I haven't seen any people with an R after their name do anything positive for people. And in fact, if we go back and we think about it, the first thing Trump did was try to get rid of health care. Now, everybody thought, Obamacare. But once they understood what it was and why it was put into place, because people couldn't buy insurance because everything was a pre-existing condition. And then, you know, if they found that you stubbed your toe and you didn't put it down on your application, they wouldn't cover something that happened in the future. I mean, it was a real racket. And they started to make insurance companies accountable and affordable to people. The first thing they do, they're going to get rid of Obamacare, and they're all cheering, and they were having parties on the lawn. I remember them all smiling and happy until McCain kind of put an end to their party. Now, these are people right away that came out to hurt the people in our state. And in addition to that, you know, they keep going after the people, and then they fill the coffers of the people that are telling them what to do. And it's just disgusting. And until you guys, if you are listening to me and you don't like what they're doing, you give them a call. You can be polite and say, hey, we don't want any of this. And the way they acted toward Tony Evers was disgusting. If you ever noticed the stuff that they were doing for our communities, the people were excited. The Republicans were sitting there staring at each other, giving each other dirty looks, like, oh, we better not be doing something for the taxpayers in our state. I mean, it was unbelievable, man.
Well, you know, Gene, I'll tell you what's really funny about that is that I took a look at part of it, and they talked to LeMahieu afterwards. You know, he's the guy from the Sheboygan area who's the majority leader in the Senate. What a doofus. The guy, he has these dull eyes. He stares into the camera and he goes, sounds like Evers wants to spend a lot of money. Yeah. Okay. On what? On books? Oh, yeah. What's a book? Yeah, he does want to spend money on books for students. Yeah, he wants. I mean, this guy, how the heck did he ever end up in a position like that? They were rude. They wouldn't stand. They wouldn't clap. I mean, they were sad. They were in the hip pocket of their donors. They're very, very sad. Go back to the lines. Jack of Merrimack, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Jack?
Well, you started out with a little discussion on inflation and gas prices in particular, and how it definitely is dependent on the international market. But there is really... It's not a short-term solution, take a few years to do, but there is a real serious solution to this problem with gas prices. Get a serious approach to renewable energy. If you put in enough money to support, price support perhaps, electric vehicles and a serious electric refuel grid, you know, not like one where you have to search around through a Tesla database to find something, but where, you know, the recharging stations are as close as ordinary gas stations are, then all of a sudden the prices of gas will drop because the oil companies will say, geez, you know, we're not going to have any market if we keep on jacking the prices up. And that can be financed. Everybody says it's too expensive, but it can be financed. There's a little thing called the depletion allowance, and I own some stock in energy companies and in oil companies in particular, inherited from my dad. And that allowance, for every gallon of oil that's taken out of the ground, they get a tax break. And the more they pump, the bigger the tax break they get. Well, these companies are making 200-300% what they made before this whole inflation thing started. If you take away that depletion allowance, they're not going to go broke. And that money, those billions and billions and billions of dollars, could be put into financing a renewable vehicle approach and an electric grid that would support the lack of needing petroleum products.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. And one of the things I want to point out in support of that is GM has already announced, and I think Ford and GM are together on this, that they're going to discontinue gas cars in the year 2035. Obviously, it takes time to switch over their assembly lines, but you know, this is 2023. In other words, in 12 years, there better be charging stations all around, because the two biggest manufacturers domestically in the country are going to be doing all electric cars. So I think, Jack, that the handwriting is on the wall. I think that your idea is excellent, and I think that people in general have come to that conclusion themselves. So we're in a transition period right now. But the other good thing that the professor Summers pointed out is that energy prices in general have come down. And that means home heating, that means natural gas, and that means everything else. So in the long run, I think if we could come back in 100 years and or they could come back to their ancestors and talk to us, they'd tell us that, in fact, we were using renewable energy. But right now, it takes political will to do that. Obviously, it takes money. The money is there, as you pointed out. The oil depletion allowance has been under attack by many in the Democratic Party for 20 or 30 years. And the oil companies are just too powerful to stop it. But the handwriting is on the wall, because when GM and Ford stop manufacturing gas cars, it's not going to matter what they think. They're going to have much less of a market. Jack, excellent comments. Thanks for calling in. We're coming to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Open 844-967-2789. Before I go to the next topic, I want to read our promo to you. Remember, $1 million ad giveaway, advertising giveaway tomorrow. Tomorrow is the day, January 26th, starting at 9 a.m. Go on civicmedia.us/million. That's our website, Civic Media website. civicmedia.us/million. For the rules, there aren't many of them, and fill out the application, because starting at 9 a.m. tomorrow, it's the Oklahoma land rush. $1 million in free advertising, professionally produced. They'll work with you, what your product is or what your service or what you want to advertise. Make some suggestions. It's whatever you want, and it'll be put on in a very clean, professional way in the market that suits you the most. So I want to make that clear. It's tomorrow now. I've been talking about it for a couple of weeks. Tomorrow, January 26th, starting at 9 a.m. Go on our website. Go on our website now when the show's over. civicmedia.us/million. Look at it. Fill out the application. Starting at 9 a.m. tomorrow, though. That's when you put it in. You start at 9 a.m. tomorrow. And you're going to get quite a little chunk of free advertising, professionally produced. I think 20 grand worth, maybe more. That's a lot of radio advertising. That's a lot of radio advertising. If you want some name recognition, sales are the name of the game. Sales are the name of the game in every industry. And name recognition is the name of the game in every industry. And you're going to get that through advertising. And there you have it. civicmedia.us/million. You know, as I was listening to all these callers and the Professor Summers, it occurred to me that in a healthily functioning democracy, what you'll have is you'll have a center-right party and a center-left party, and you'll disagree on some issues, but you'll have a united purpose, and that is to help America, to benefit our state, to benefit our people. When you have a party, in this case, it's the Republican Party, that it was not always the case. That wasn't the case in the 19th century, and it probably wasn't the case even up through Eisenhower, but when you have a Republican Party whose core objective is not to benefit the country, not to benefit the state, not to benefit people, but simply to stay in power, you get something like what I'm about to describe, which you may have heard, but you may not have heard all of the details. Kevin McCarthy just announced that he says, I am about to submit a bill that I oppose my party's tax plan, but I'm bringing it forward anyway because I promised people I will. Now, what kind of a leader does that? And what is the tax plan? What is the tax plan? Believe it or not, it has several components. A, the bill will abolish the IRS, all income taxes for anybody, all corporate taxes, and all estate taxes. Oh, really? You can do that? How are you going to pay soldiers' salaries, pay for weapons, pay federal employees? How are you going to run the country? You're going to let the commie Ruskies and the commie Chinese come in and take us over? No, they say. Instead of all that, once we've abolished income taxes, corporate taxes, and estate taxes, we will impose a 30% sales tax on all retail sales and spending. 30%. So if you buy 100 bucks worth of lumber at the lumber yard, you're going to pay $130 for it. And that $30 will go to the federal government. And, of course, there'll be state and local sales taxes, so you'll be paying probably 1.5 times the price of the lumber in that example. This is absolute madness. It's absolute madness. McCarthy himself said, I oppose my party's tax plan. What do you mean his party's tax plan? What happened with a couple of these yahoos that the sociopaths, the really far right, the people, some of them who asked for preemptive pardons because they go, well, I didn't commit any crimes, but just in case I did, why don't you pardon me type guys? That is being proposed by them, and he is afraid that if he doesn't let it go forward to a vote in the Congress, one of them is what all it takes, will call for a vote of confidence on the speaker. It used to be it would take 50% of them. Now it takes one of them. That's not even 1%. There are 435 congressmen, just one of them. Then all the Democrats will vote against him. And if he loses 5 Republicans, he's out as speaker. So how nutty does something have to be before he get up on his hind legs and grow a pair and say, well, no, I'm not going to do that. What would it take? Really, what would it take? He is going to let out for a vote a 30% sales tax and knock out the entire IRS and all income, corporate, and state taxes. That's the kind of guy he is. That's the kind of party they are, putting forward a vote that he himself said is a disaster. They are not out to help America. And this is another thing that slays me. It's George Santos. He filed, quote, corrected, end quote, financial statements from his campaign. He said he loaned himself $700,000. Well, now he goes, well, the $500 loan on there, I checked a box that said it's from personal funds of candidate. No, it's not. But he says it was from the candidate. Now, what does that mean? He's flirting with perjury and obstruction here. If it's not from personal funds of the candidate, what does it mean to say from the candidate? I mean, the guy's a serial liar. However, that is very serious. So it's not his personal funds. What? Somebody slipped it to him and then he turned it on. That's a conduit. It's a felony. It's illegal. Then there's a $125,000 loan on it. And he says, no, that's not from personal funds either. I said it was before. I made a, quote, mistake, end quote. And then they go, all right, well, where you have to put down where it's from. He leaves that blank. The law on that is if he got a bank loan, it's not illegal, but then he had to have collateral and it has to be disclosed. He didn't do it. Otherwise, it's illegal. It's a crime. And this is the guy that they say shouldn't be on committees and should stay there until the voters look at him 2 years from now. And they throw Swalwell and Schiff off the Intelligence Committee because they're too good at their jobs. And they keep this clown on there and he just files a, quote, corrected, end quote. You don't do that. You don't file something under oath or something that's required by law. And then once you get caught, quote, corrected, end quote. But if you do, normally you're a little slicker about it. Normally you don't say, okay, it's not from my personal funds, but it's from me. You don't do that kind of stuff. We're coming to the end of the show. Great show. A great presentation by Professor Summers. Great call-ins as always. Matt Flynn Direct will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Signing off for today.